Siyagodola man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shape.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
Greetings and salutations all the way from Parktown at the Sunday Times Studios. We are here with our politics team, fresh from elections. Fresh may be the wrong word in this case. I think we're all a bit battered and broken after a week of intense storytelling and running around just trying to cover these, what's arguably one of the biggest elections in South Africa. I'm joined by my colleagues here, Zingisa Mvumvu, Kwanita Hunter, Apiwe de Klerk, and Zimase Matewane. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. I know everyone's a bit tired, but let's see if we can give South Africa a bit of some insight into what happened over these past elections.
And do our country duty.
Yes.
Even though the president did give a declaration to say we all should take a holiday.
Absolutely. Unfortunately,
I don't think the president knows what we have to go through in a newsroom. Especially with his party, where the shenanigans just does not stop. We're going to be talking about the ANC now. I think unsurprising that the party had taken 8 of the 9 provinces. They will be governing in all of them besides the Western Cape. But I think the interesting part here is that the issue is the issue of the split vote. Now, I was doing some number crunching on Saturday evening just before the final results came out, and it was at around 99% at the time. And there was an interesting trend here. So that the ANC, firstly, let's talk about this. They dropped in their national support and in their provincial support in all provinces. So they've suffered declines in every single province that they've contested in. And secondly, if you look at some of the numbers provincially versus nationally, for instance, like in KZN, about 1.9 million people voted for the ANC in the province, and about 2 million people voted for the ANC nationally. This was a trend that we saw throughout all the provinces, where people had casted a vote for the ANC provincially, but more people had casted a vote for the ANC nationally. And there were some massive differences. Like in Gauteng, for instance, there were about 250,000 people which saw the difference between province and national. So more people in Gauteng voted for the ANC on a national scale than they did in the province. And this is an ongoing trend throughout all the provinces. For example, let me give you another province here. Like in the Eastern Cape, for example, about 1.3 million people voted for the ANC in the province, but about 1.4 million people voted for the ANC nationally. So we can see this massive split between the ANC's support in the province and the ANC's support national. And I think the big question is, Ace Magashule may argue that this is a collective, it's because of the ANC's collective leadership that got them these votes. Other people like Fikile Mbalula will say, no, it's because of the president. Is it because of the president? Did he have an effect on the ANC's provincial versus national vote? Who's going first? Everybody wants to talk.
I'll repeat this point, especially when it comes to Gauteng. I know no one person would ever go out of their house just so they can vote for Makura. No. I'm just saying, it's not that popular. It's not... But you know of people who would wake up and go and vote just because it's Ramaphosa who's running. You see what I'm saying? And it would be true in other provinces. I'm sure even in Ngcobo, where the premier candidate of Eastern Cape is from, no one will wake up and go and vote for Oscar, but they will go and vote
Oscar
for Ramaphosa.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that.
But and you know that town is famous. Okay, no.
But you see, Ambil, it's pretty much obvious that you know, many people you know who voted for the ANC nationally, it's because of the Ramaphosa, if I may put it that way. It was expected. Hence, I'm shocked when the likes of Ace Magashule are disputing it, because they ANC's own internal research, you know, since parties were doing their own researches on how they were going to fare and the factors in terms of their popularity, it revealed that their president was more popular than the party. So you'd expect that indeed many people voted for him.
But how do you know that translates to votes? Because, I mean, he got below 60%. If we were to look at that logic, then he should have gotten...
No, it's not the same.
There are more people who voted for the ANC
national
because they could see his face on the ballot. You see,
yeah. remember, if you are an ANC supporter, if you are a diehard ANC supporter,
yeah.
What informs you to not vote for the ANC in a province, right?
Yeah.
But so it's his popularity, that is a tested thing, because the argument that Ace Magashule and the Wenzani Brigade are saying, Wenzani Brigade, can you see I'm tired, is that, he should have gotten above 60%, he should have gotten a two-third majority. The ANC was on a steep decline.
Yeah.
Everyone could predict that. Yeah. The fact that that the ANC's decline was sort of halted at 57% is enough to show that people bought into this thing of the new dawn or the renewal thing. People bought into it. Obviously, it's a matter of time to see whether it was, you know, they were sold a pipe dream. But if you are a voter that's frustrated at the ANC, you're frustrated. Like, say if you're a voter from KZN and you can see what's happening in the ANC in the province and you can see that the ANC just doesn't have your interests. And so, but you're voting for the IFP in KZN, but you're not voting for...
I think it's easier for a traditional IFP voter to vote for the IFP in KZN so that the IFP can be official opposition in the legislature. Yeah. But they know Buthelezi is not going to be president of South Africa, so they'd rather give their vote to the ANC. We've seen it happen over a long period of time. I refuse to associate it with Ramaphosa. I think it's a trend that's always been there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it depends. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think the numbers of split votes were not these type of numbers.
But these are significant numbers. On this one, I truly believe that the reason why the numbers are like this is because of Tumame.
I mean, yeah, but it's unfortunate that it's misguided because we're not a state whereby the president has got sweeping executive powers. That's the
guys,
very unfortunate
part. You know, for a lot of people to vote for the ANC nationally, it's very easy.
Yeah,
because even Zuma years. Do you buy into this thing of what or do you disagree with Mbalula when he was saying, if things went differently in NASDAQ, we would have gotten to 40%. That's what our research is telling us.
You know, when we go into elections, there is this, especially here in South Africa, there is this thing already in your head that the ANC is going to win, the president is going to come from the ANC. I can vote for the ANC nationally, but if I want change in the province where I live, I must make an informed decision then. People look at it as if you're wasting your vote if you vote for ACDP nationally, because ACDP is
not
going to win.
It's not going to be government.
Yeah, but so I'm saying, fine.
Which province are they going to be government?
I'm saying, okay, cool. Ramaphosa may have been there, but there's also that advantage of being the president of the ANC and people refusing to waste their vote by voting for someone who is not going to be president.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, but...
Absolutely, and I mean, just to agree with Zuma to a certain degree, but I'm still standing. Ramaphosa is the one. But you are right, because when people vote, for instance, me, the other thing that disturbs me is when people compare performance in local and national. And,
yeah.
Because, for instance, in local government, people vote. The people's voting is very different, and what influences them, because it's about basic service delivery at local level. If you who's going to give you that, you vote for them, not because it's the ANC.
Let me give you an example. There's a story that I did in the last local government elections in an area that I won't mention, where the councillor candidate of the ANC, IFP supporters, it's a IFP stronghold, but that ward was under the ANC. And IFP people were saying, this is the guy that we want. He's the guy that we trust. Fine, he doesn't come from the IFP, but this is the person that we believe will help us in terms of development. So they voted for the ANC. It's not trust in the ANC, it's trust in that particular guy. So I'm just trying to say that it's the decision to vote is informed by a whole lot of issues, especially the national vote.
Okay. Let's move on very quickly to another big issue. Well, this is post-elections now, and this is after the ANC's NEC on Monday had decided on some of its premier candidates. In the Eastern Cape, we have Mr. Oscar Mabuyane, Free State Sisi Ntombela, Gauteng David Makura, no surprise there. KZN Sisi Zikalala, no really surprise there as well. Limpopo Stan Matabate, Mpumalanga Rafilwe Mswini, and Northern Cape Samani Sal. And I think the big contestation here is this... the ANC's 60% policy or the 50-50% policy when it comes to premiers. The NEC further agreed that in provinces where premiers are men, then at least 60% of the provincial executive councils must be constituted by women. There was also another consensus that in instances where the premier is a woman, there shall be at least 50-50 representation in the executive councils. What do we make of this policy, guys?
Yeah, that policy of theirs is going to cause them a lot of troubles, but I think Vumbo is our foremost expert on this one.
Must I'm not an expert, but you see, I mean, me, what perturbs me first about the ANC, ANC likes cutting corners. For instance, ANC always sings about this gender balance, parity. First of all, one like me, I would like to, you know, think that the ANC is shooting themselves in the foot, you know. First of all, why, if that is the thing, why can't they make this a constitutional policy that even in terms of the election into ANC structures, this must be the thing? Because now you just want to parachute people. I'm sorry to say it. It's not like I'm undermining women, but I believe that everyone, when given an opportunity, they have a chance to present themselves. But you see, this policy doesn't really apply when they, you know, most of these provincial executives of the ANC, the top fives there, you'll find that there's one female, because that policy is not enforced from that level. And then now, all of a sudden, you just want to parachute people to the top, to the executive, because you want to balance gender. So that is where I believe the ANC is cutting corners, and that is where I believe that some of these people who will end up making it to top position will be people who don't necessarily have experience, be it politically or even in governance. And then you have weak government that can actually work in, against ANC in the future. So I think the ANC has got to review how it approaches these things holistically in terms of the gender parity balance. You can't just you know, wake up after every eve of the election and only think then about balancing gender when it is not culture within the organization in terms of how people are elected into structures. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and you have the gender parity challenge. You also have the youth challenge, because the young lions, they want to be in government also, and I don't know if they are ready. Instead, you see the likes of Zikalala being paraded as young people in the ANC because they are graduates of the Youth League. Okay, cool, fine. But they they are not under 35, you know. And I know, for example, that in KZN there's a huge push to have young people in the executive. So that's also another challenge. And you also still have people who are saying, well, I've been serving the ANC, I've been serving in government. I'm also ready to be MEC. You know, I'm 50, but I'm also ready to be MEC. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge.
So my point with this issue with the women is that you can't have a party which is a women's league. That is one of their roles, is to drive such policies, mm-hmm. being as weak as it is now. And you must
But what do you mean the women's league is weak?
Is it strong?
Stronger than other women's league I've seen before,
but,
definitely.
But is it strong in terms of pushing for policy that advocates for women, or is it strong in terms of Batabile and those girls wearing the ugly uniform and filling stadiums? There's a difference.
Yeah.
Because it's superficial.
Wait, my point was that, and I will show you how they are not strong.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never been strong. You must emphasize that.
Yeah. So that's always, that's always been my point, that you look at all ANC structures and see the women being represented there. They're not there in powerful positions. You don't find women as secretaries of provinces.
Which
you don't find them being chairpersons of provinces. And it's a, primarily because the ANC Women's League, and I made this point about when we were talking offline about the ANC Youth League of Julius Malema and Fikile Mbalula, how that transition happened. You found people that they call the Young Lions now that had then gone on to inherit a powerful position while they were still young. In the Eastern Cape, you had Oscar Mabuyane in KZN, which is a very important province. You had Sihle. In Western Cape, well, it's a pity that they put that guy there who lost the province as a secretary. It was Mjongile. And because there was a plan to say, we are young, as young people, these are our ideas, we are taking over the party. Now, this is a youth league. In the youth league, there are women. So if a women's league says, this is our ideology, every structure where there are women, we want to be represented. Don't you think by now, you would have strong candidates for a secretary general of the ANC who's a woman, for a president of the ANC who's a woman? But because they're not strong enough, it's, yeah.
That's the legacy of the Premier League Zuma years, is that we collapsed structures that played a very important role in unseating the status quo in the past. Example, the Youth League and their relationship in unseating Mbeki, and you the same instrument you used to fight political agendas, the Women's League and the Youth League, you weakened it to a point where it can only exist based on your kindness as the incumbents. And so, if you look at the Youth League now, people are being parachuted without no constituency. If you look at the Fees Must Fall, yes, they can speak well, the Fees Must Fall activists. Yes, they can speak well. But what constituency do you demand? Really, yeah. What constituency do you demand? Number one.
Some of them can't even speak well.
No.
That's a topic for another day.
But also the other thing is your understanding of structures, and that's why it becomes then so easy to say, we put you there, we can take you out. The same thing with women leaders.
Yeah.
So this decision on Monday night by the ANC Special National Executive Committee was supposed to be this kind of revolutionary, effort to enforce gender parity. But what you are doing then is that you are incapacitating women to say, you must be at the behest of the men who are in charge.
Yeah.
Because if you're saying all women must be speakers, effectively that's the ceiling for women.
Women
should have rejected that thing, eh? They don't understand it
because as a woman, you're saying, no, we only have two females, the Northwest, you must go back and find a woman candidate. I'm just using that as an example.
Mm.
But the reality is, as a woman organization, you have to realize we have no strong candidates there. Every woman who's going to be pushed into that position of premier in the Northwest is going to be, not by herself, not by her choice, but by design, become a proxy of a man.
That is true.
And what's going to happen is that they are going to elections in that province sometime this year as the ANC. Whoever emerges there, if it's not the woman candidate that they place as a premier, then that premier is going to have problems with the structure.
Okay, I think we're just going to have to see what happens in the case of the Northwest.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
Well, Welcome back. Let's go straight into National Assembly. The ANC managed to garner 230 seats in the 6th Parliament that's about to sit next month. This is down from, I think, 249 mm-hmm. the last time. So they've seen a bit of a drop in their national support. The DA is sitting at about 84 seats. And the big story here, the big success story, is the EFF. Now with almost double the amounts of seats that they have, with 44 seats in Parliament, the IFP has seen a bit of a resurgence, most of their votes coming from KZN, with 14 seats in Parliament. And another interesting factor, the Freedom Front Plus, now with 10 seats in Parliament. I think from the national scale, we also have to go down into provinces, because I think we were all sitting on Saturday, keeping our eyes on just one section of the vote, and that was Gauteng, because it kept going from about 50 down to 49 to 51.
It kept looking like Jesus was coming back.
Jesus was leaving.
I decided to take a break.
I said this thing that the former president JZ was right when he said Tito was at George Koch, because clearly the home is here that Jesus just and waves at Makora, and then he goes back in.
No, let's start
imagine
the national.
Imagine if you are Makora, eh?
Yeah.
Imagine if he slept on Saturday.
Oh, do I have a job? Do I not have a job?
I couldn't sleep on Friday, and I was just a journalist, so yay, him.
And there was a girl who's now made it to the 6th administration as an MP. She was really low down the list. She was at some point, she was biting her nails, just be like, because she was at number 36.
Yes.
So it was just the most hilarious thing to watch, because people were like, yeah, it's tough out there. But anyways, the ANC has made it with exactly one seat majority.
So I think we all sort of knew at the beginning that the ANC would win these elections, just by how much we did not know at the time. And just looking at these figures from the National Assembly, before we dive into the provinces, 230 seats with the EFF's sort of 44. If the ANC and the EFF decide to come to a working relationship here, we might see some massive changes in Parliament, guys. What do you think?
It's the same as the past.
Yeah, actually.
It's not any different. So the ANC's loss in seats compensates for the EFF's gain in seats. So together they have the same amount of seats that they had in the fifth administration, right?
Yeah, I think around there.
Yeah.
They are
exactly.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
And then what you are saying, it may happen, it will depend what the EFF has to trade with. But the previous parliament, they told them that we want expropriation without compensation. We can change the constitution now. Mm. This is the 2/3, and you all know how that went, and it resulted to the DA running municipalities here in Gauteng and in Tshwane. Because during that talk about coalitions and stuff, Julia says they brought it up that we have the numbers. The condition is that you guys expropriate, and they were told where to get off. So
But land really was the big issue, I think, of this election, more than mm-hmm. race politics. I don't know if you guys will agree with me, because the Freedom Front Plus was really, you know, honest about the appraisal of why they had an increased support base. They've almost tripled their support mm-hmm. compared to the past. They had 4 seats, they now have 10 seats. They've also gotten seats in provinces where it's unheard of.
Of course.
Did they have seats in the Eastern Cape before this? No.
No.
And now they have a seat.
Yeah,
in
they
Eastern
do.
Cape.
Actually, they are represented.
They made it to the Eastern Cape.
Yep.
Yeah. How? The only place where they don't have seats is KZN.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is that their own analysis is that it was the land question, and that they say that their stance on, anti-amending the constitution or anti-expropriation found resonance not only in the white community, but also they say in the brown community, whatever the brown community is. But anyways, they were talking about the colored community. So the rise of the Freedom Front Plus was something people got onto quite quickly, because people were shocked, because the Freedom Front Plus does not represent representative of a tiny grouping of South Africa, a tiny minority. And so it's interesting to see that their support has actually grown.
Okay, guys, before we get into the bigger parties, let's look at some of the smaller parties. The UDM has taken a massive knock. COPE down to 2 seats in Parliament. Good has emerged. Patricia de Lille's party has emerged from the Western Cape with 2 seats. And ATM. has it to call it Jimmy Money's party. It's not Jimmy Money's party, but I think he's become the sort of face of it, or the person we all refer to. And they've come around with 2 seats as well. So we've seen a bit of a change at the bottom. What do you guys make of this? Is this sort of people who didn't know who to really cast their vote for sort of looking at the smaller parties as an alternative?
You know, I mean, one thing I realize is that small parties generally have lost in that regard. You know, the new ones that are coming in have actually chowed on small parties. The APC of Themba Kodi is out of parliament. PAC is hanging there by the thread with 1 seat.
They've made a comeback. They went the previous one.
Who?
The PAC.
No, they were there.
Were they?
No, they were there. The president. They were there.
They were there.
They had a seat.
They had 1 seat. The only
were they?
Yes.
Yeah. PAC.
No,
yes.
It was the, no, in this one, they had a seat.
The only party
who was their representative?
That guy that was there with Ramaphosa in the Val. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. So.
Strange that I missed them.
But Al Jamaa didn't have a seat in the last one, and they got a seat.
I told you about Al Jamaa.
What I'm trying to say is that I think the small parties in parliament need to find a way to make their voice heard more, because it means that people really didn't appreciate it. I mean, I don't know, because you would have hoped that someone like Kodi, who has done sterling work at SCOPA, would have earned a seat, but seemingly that was not enough. Maybe politically they don't do that much to convince their voters. So it is very unfortunate that guys like Kodi are not coming back.
One person that was hard done by the voters is Tlomama. That guy was vocal.
But can we maybe think about that? Probably the trend in South Africa is that undecided voters vote for smaller parties. So there's no loyalty at all with smaller parties.
Yes.
That it's a revolving door even. So you go in, you can come out at the bottom of the rank. You know, for example, you know, the National Freedom Party made significant gains in the last round, right?
Yeah.
And now they know
it was their first election. Eh?
It was their first election, and now they.
Yeah, but I think their problems
are
more to do with what had first the decision by their leader to accept the cabinet posting, or the posting as a deputy minister, and secondly, what then? It was painful, the fact that her health took a wrong turn and whatnot. So you have someone who had been popular as a leader of that party and who had been recognizable and whatnot, not being there at all, not going like you would expect with the UTM, where you would always see Olomisa, with the EFF, you see Julius and all. So she, for me, she was the most recognizable person as the face of the party. And then when she's not there, either because of duties as a deputy minister or because of her ill health, I think that really, really tended.
But Hang in 2014 was obviously this rising star, and this, you know, considering the drama that happened with Hang, was an offshoot of the DA of some sorts. So I'm just trying to think in some way, that isn't the perhaps the support for ATM and Good that similar voter pattern to say we vote for the new kids on the block that have recognizable names attached to them, and then the next election we try someone new.
See, the other trend that I realized, I mean, I know perhaps I'm being extra here, but there's also a tendency of regional voting in South Africa that I think hasn't been pondered enough that much. For instance, when you check most of the EFF vote, the EFF is dominant in the northern provinces, being Northwest, Limpopo. They've even grown in Mpumalanga this time around, and Gauteng, and that is where, in terms of, you know, tribal lines, you find people who associate with the EFF leadership, being Julius, who's a Mopedi from Limpopo, Floyd, who's a Shitsonga fellow from Limpopo as well. So you see that trend as well. I mean, ATM as well, most of their leadership, in fact, and its birth is rooted in the Eastern Cape, and most of their votes came there as well. But then it's not so conclusive because, I mean, the EFF even increased their vote in KZN, although there's no effect of that.
I mean,
from 70 to 300,000. So it was quite interesting. EFF.
The EFF. They
clobbered or they were clobbered?
They clobbered.
Let's talk more about the EFF here as we get into our bigger parties. The EFF has now secured about, I think it was about 1.8 million votes, bringing its support base to about 10.78%. And this is from 6.35% in 2014. Now, out of the 48 parties that were on the ballot paper, the EFF, I think they had sort of enjoyed the most overall growth in their party. At a provincial level, what's interesting is that the EFF is now the official opposition to the ANC in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and North West. I think after a very successful campaign up to now, I think the EFF has done quite well, and they're becoming a bit more of, I think, they're really changing the face of everything that we thought. We didn't think, I don't think we ever thought that they would be sitting at as the official opposition in three provinces, nonetheless.
In Northwest, we expected, I think.
They were. Limpopo, they were.
And Limpopo. Mpumalanga,
that was quite a surprise.
That was not a total surprise, but you
because the margins are still very big.
Yeah, but you can see how much, it reflects how much they had been working that province. I think the other thing, you must look at the previous opposition, official opposition party there, because it too was on a decline this election. So I'm not sure how much of that overall decline of the DA
shows the growth of
in Mpumalanga, to be specific. But yes, we're gonna have a lot of noise in parliament this time around.
I think if you look at the parliamentary numbers, I think that in the past, provincial legislatures, besides probably like your Gauteng maybe or the Western Cape, it really wasn't a hive of opposition, especially in a province like maybe Limpopo, to a large degree even Northwest.
And Free State.
And the Free State. It's because the ANC had such high numbers in terms of their majority that the opposition could not really, play an effective role as an opposition, let alone as trying to become the majority party. But I think that has changed quite a bit. If you look at KZN, the ANC has suffered a 10% reduction. So of 80 seats, the ANC only has 44. And so as a result, this reduction in the majority will force the opposition to step up, but also really put the majority party in the ANC under immense pressure to deliver and to actually perform, because they see that voters are not as sentimental as they probably were. And I mean, Gauteng is the test case, because you have a one seat majority, anything can go wrong. And I do think that this is good for democracy.
Yeah, it is really good for democracy. The case I will make is that of the Eastern Cape, where you had the EFF and their members not being allowed to attend sittings over an issue that was resolved at national level about stupid thing like overalls. So because it's just the two of them, nothing happened. So,
but they have four now.
Yeah, no. What I'm saying is, things like that will not, such things will not happen in a province like Mpumalanga, in a province like Gauteng, because there is a vibrant opposition. It's not just the EFF. You'll have the DA also fighting. You'll have, you see what I'm saying? And they won't just do as they please, the ruling party, even on stupid things like telling someone out, but you must not come here with overalls. What does that have to do with anything? Especially when at a level like the National Assembly, you allow people to, you see what I'm saying? So aside from that, I'm just showing you with such a small thing. With real issues now, when people are crying out for service delivery to say you are not delivering, when people want to hold the executive into account, you have more people, not just an ANC caucus that is just strong arming everyone.
Yeah, you know, with the AFF growth, what I would like to see this time around, you know, especially in provinces, is what sort of impact are they going to make, a real impact? Nothing political. I mean, because you would remember that most of the time the EFF, be it in the National Assembly and even in provincial legislatures in the previous administration, that was until the resignation of Zuma, most of their, you know, work was around the individual that was Zuma. Now is the time. I mean, they really got to do real stuff like pushing for land expropriation without compensation towards the end of the previous administration. But this time around, they start from scratch, you know, right from the beginning. They have to push policy. We will have to see what kind of policies are they going to push for, particularly in Gauteng. You know, because Gauteng is going to be quite interesting, because any vote can swing either way. One or two ANC MPLs absent, you know, it can go either way. So, you know, and the EFF has been quite smart in how, although they are not the majority, they tend to get their way in terms of how policies are swung, you know, in these lawmaking houses. So that's what I want to see with the EFF, not only in the National Assembly, but in provinces as well, in terms of the real impact in policy making that they are going to make now that they have increased numbers.
And the ANC made this analysis themselves to say that probably why they were spared in this election from a real assault on their support was because opposition parties looked more at them than they looked at them, that they presented their own pictures, I mean their own ideas, and that's probably the fault of the DA in this elections, and so that's how they sort of understood with as to why they were given this respite and why many people voted for Ramaphosa and not voted for the party per se.
Mm. We'll get into that and split vote now, Zimasa.
On the issue of growth of opposition parties, particularly to hold, you know, the governing ANC to account, some of the conversations that I had with the leader of the IFP, the premier candidate of the IFP in KwaZulu-Natal, Mr. Hlabisa, and the premier candidate of the DA, Zwakele Mncwango, was that, well, of course, the IFP is happy about getting back their official opposition status. And the DA, although they lost that status, they are still happy and excited because they managed to grow in places where the DA did not exist anymore, specifically in the northern KwaZulu-Natal. So they were saying that we have been dealing with a majority ANC that is arrogant and basically looks out for the ANC in the legislature, not the people. So now that we have the IFP, the DA, and the EFF, three of them having enjoyed so much growth, despite us not having been in government, we're looking forward to going there and, you know, telling the ANC where to get off.
I'm talking about the DA, Apiwe. We're talking to you and your party because we all know that you voted for the DA.
Yeah. No, I did not. You can look at my thumbs. They are not blue.
Now, for the first time since 2004, the DA is going to see its continuous growth trajectory taking a knock. The DA, which has enjoyed a growth in national support of between 4 and 6% every election over the past 15 years, lost about 1.5% of its voters as compared to 2014, which is sort of a break in its constant growth trajectory. But rather unsurprisingly, the DA emerged victorious in the Western Cape with about 1.1 million views, which left them at about 55%, almost double that of its nearest competitor, which was the ANC. But however, both parties suffered a decline in support in the province as compared to 2014. Apiwe, I think the big question now about the DA is, and with their own internal politics sort of stemming from this, what is going to happen to Musi Maimane? If anything at all.
Yeah, I can't give you an answer on this one, but as soon as it was clear that the DA was losing support by Friday already. Actually, I had a conversation with one of their leaders by Thursday, and they were saying, as things look, heads will roll. Because they go to an election where they want to increase their support nationally, firstly, but also they want to force the ANC below 50 and take over Gauteng. Instead, the opposite happens. Yeah. So obviously, there are people who are ready with knives. So I think he's having sleepless nights.
It's not fair, though. I don't think it's fair on Musi. Well, we all know that they are saying they are taking collective responsibility, but at the end of the day, he was, you know, the leader, he's the head. It's not fair to cut off the head just because they suffered in these elections, because I feel like the whole DA campaign was a mess, and I don't think Musi had a say in each and every, you know, province that this is what we should say, this is how we should conduct our campaign. The DA, I think they just need to go back to basics, understand what they are trying to sell to South Africa, perhaps stick to their ideologies and try to project a honest, you know, account of what a DA government would look like, because there is no Zuma anymore. They are not going to use anti-corruption and this and this anymore. The people of South Africa have continuously voted for the ANC despite a whole lot of corruption scandals. So it's not working. It's not working for them. It's not Musi. I don't think it's Musi's fault. I think it's the whole of the party that's the problem.
But
main problem with the DA, coming into these elections, and that is a consequence. I mean, the results are just a consequence of what I'm about to say, has suffered the biggest identity crisis in its history. The DA no longer knows itself. I think whatever strategy that they came with, because the DA, I think in 2014, to be honest, they reached their limit in terms of their traditional constituents of the people that ought to have voted for them. And in trying to open that up, because they knew that beyond that, they can't grow any further. And then they found themselves having to either satisfy their traditional voter or to, you know, satisfy the voter that they're trying to lose, which is mainly the black vote, if I may put it that way. And that seems to have seriously backfired this time around. And I don't know what the DA is going to do going forward, but they need to do some serious soul searching and really decide on what they are. I mean, in the past 5 years or so, they haven't really had an identity. It's been a touch and go. Yeah, we are either this or that.
That's why the traditional voters have left them for the other weird party.
And you see,
we're not going to name them.
No, the people who left the DA voted for Freedom Front Plus. And the basis for that is what? Is that the Freedom Front Plus has got an identity and they are not willing to compromise, come what may. Yes, the DA can paint them nationalists all they want, but at least it's better to stand for something than to stand on top of the fence, because you will fall either way and you won't like it when you fall.
But the thing about what the DA did in terms of moving away from its sort of core values or whatever was an effort to grow the party. Because how then do you grow when your ideas only appeal to a minority?
But the thing is, should they even grow? But should they be satisfied with where they are?
You see, that's the argument.
Because Freedom Front Plus will be satisfied with where they are.
But what you are saying is correct. So there's been this thinking in the party based on who you talked to, that, okay, Musi won the day when the party adopted that policy on diversity and so on and so on. And there has been that argument that they had, a big argument that claimed the head of police, the Gwen Gwenya, a very young and upcoming policy maker, if you would call. So those discussions hurt the party a lot. You had people who felt that the core liberal principles of the DA, the party was moving away from.
Mm.
But you had other members of the DA who would tell you, hey, chief, when I was when I joined the DA, no one asked whether I'm a liberal or not. And then you had those people saying, but in the African context, what does liberalism mean? So are you going to start from nowhere and disregard the past of what Africa has experienced as a continent and also South Africa? So when you are talking about the identity of the party, I think that's the main crisis. You mm-hmm. have these liberals who believe in that what liberalism means in the traditional sense, and these ones who are saying, but historically, this is what we have experienced. We are espoused to liberal values and whatnot, but this is where we have to start. And then when we fix this and this and that, and others then feel that you are playing into identity and into race politics.
Hence,
so that's a big crisis that they are having based on this.
Hence, you had some people in the DA saying that these ones are trying to make the DA some sort of an ANC.
You know?
So whether or not that is the truth, it's neither here nor there, because it's not a matter of facts that you that or something that is tangible. It's a matter of what you believe as a politician. Now, for a party that is government to three of our biggest metros, a province in the Western Cape, one of the most important provinces, you can't afford to just go on and go on about ideology. You have to find ways where you can implement. So that's their biggest challenge. If they were having this crisis before they even got into government, it would have been better for them. But now that they are in government, it's a problem for them, because you can either lose or gain voters based on the service that you deliver.
But guys, unfortunately, that is all we have time for this week. I think just looking forward from where we're going now with after elections, towards the 20th of May, we're going to have the swearing in of MPs of the National Assembly and the election of the presiding officers and the president. We're going to have the NCOP swearing, the NCOP swearing in on the 23rd of May. And then on the 25th is the inauguration of the president, and parliament will be opening very shortly after that. So we've still got a busy time ahead of us as politics journalists. Still a lot more to go on. A lot of more shenanigans in the ANC that we're looking forward to as well in the lead up to all of this. But thank you guys so much for joining us. We'll be back same time next week. You can follow us on hashtag ST Politics Weekly on Twitter, or you can find us on the Times Live website under the opinions and analysis section. Guys, thank you so much for joining me in studio today. We'll catch you again next week.
Thank you, Emil.